housekeeping.
Yes. Quick housekeeping. To those who follow the show, thank you. Social media, find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. To our Patreon subscribers, thank you so much. If you're interested in helping support Jay and I and giving us gas money,
I've never seen a penny of that gas money,
no,
by the way.
No. Well, I've had to mail a lot of koozies away. Patreon.com/unfilteredcraft. Now, for something a little heavier, the Denver brewing community lost a good friend this week. Jason Bueller, who was the brewmaster, the head brewer at Denver Beer Co., passed away in a climbing accident. I'm sure many of you are aware of that. And Charlie Berger, Charlie, who's a good friend of the show, asked us if we would just mention the GoFundMe. I think they're at $100,000 now, looking to try to get to $250,000. That goes, it changed. The total changed. They've done really well. But all of the money is going to go to Jason's family, to his wife, to his kids, and to help them get through this. I don't know how you can get through it, but to help them, at least financially. You can just find the GoFundMe. If you go to GoFundMe.com and search for Jason Bueller, it's B-U-E-H-L-E-R. I'm not going to give you the full address. I just went and searched for it. Easy to find. So please do that. It would be much appreciated. It's just an awful... I mean, John mentioned it before we got going.
Makes you stop and think.
Yeah.
Makes you stop and think, and it makes you live every day like it's your last. I mean, you never know when it's coming, and, you know, do good things and be good to people and, you know, live it.
For sure.
Don't pass up on those beers with friends and family these days, because you might not have another chance to do it in the future.
Oh, man. Okay. More heavy. Morgan Adams Foundation and the Chili Booze and Brews Fest. We won't go into details there because we want to get John on the horn here. But we've got a few more weeks of Chili Booze and Brews. We know that all of the funds from that are going to go to the Morgan Adams Foundation to help support child cancer research. So
yep, we're in week three, so get out there and visit your Chili restaurants, your brewers, your distillers that are part of the Chili Brews and Brews Festival and support the Morgan Adams Foundation, please. So on that note, I'm super jacked about this. This is an interview.
We've been trying to do this for months.
I was going to say, we've had some that have taken longer to get scheduled, but I think this one was going to happen fairly quickly if a certain pandemic hadn't occurred. John was probably the last guy I saw live and in person in February before the city got shut down.
It was on our calendar.
Last week in February, we had sat down and I said, hey, how about let's put it out next week or the week after, and it started going downhill quick.
Yep. That's the voice of John Legnard, by the way.
Yeah,
John, enough of me talking. Can you introduce yourself, good sir?
Sure. My name is John Legnard, and I am the brewmaster at the Blue Moon Brewing Company here in Denver in the Rhino District. And I have been here since we opened in July of 2016, but I've been with... Coors Brewing Company, the Sandlot Brewery, and now Blue Moon since 1995.
I mean, I feel like you should just run the interview because people want to hear you talk. But where do we want to start, Jay?
I don't know. He's been brewing Blue Moon since before I could drink legally.
Let's
put that into perspective.
I've been brewing Blue Moon since before some of your listeners were born.
Probably. 25
probably.
Years.
I mean, we can start at the beginning.
We can go all over the place.
I can go all the way back to the early days. And it might be entertaining, it might be boring, but I think it'll be fun for people to at least hear the history.
Cheers, by the way.
Cheers.
Cheers indeed. I think the beginning is a great place because
I've been drinking
Blue Moon since college, which is awesome.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so back in 1986, I'm dating myself. I came to Colorado, moved to Fort Collins, went to school at CSU, was going to do veterinary medicine, really interested in becoming a veterinarian. Got sidetracked by beer my junior year. A lot of people get sidetracked in college by beer, and it's it leads them to not finish college. But mine,
they go a different direction.
Yeah. One of my good buddies and roommates said, "I want to take this homebrewing class. Uh-huh. We can learn how to make beer cheaper and better tasting than we can buy in the store."
Okay.
And that was a huge selling point. And I think the other selling point was he said, "Well, we can get these $6 cases of Uber." And drink them, and then refill the bottles. So we had it was kind of a dual purpose.
Okay.
They had the best cases. We had furniture made at our house.
I don't remember
they were the waxed, they were the waxed cartons. Oh man, they were good beer.
Damn.
Well, it was 86.
It was 86, but we started.
I was two.
Started homebrewing in that class in 1986. Yeah.
Was that a CSU class?
It wasn't a CSU class. Oh, and that's okay. The funniest thing. I'm actually on the board for the fermentation science program up there. But we weren't allowed to brew on campus then. You couldn't have an alcohol-related class on campus. So we were literally one block off campus on Lake Street at our other buddy Mike's house, taking the class that we learned how to brew beer because we were off campus. So we weren't allowed to brew on campus. So we did it at their house across the street.
What a world.
Yeah, learn how to brew beer and hang out.
Who was running the class?
You know, it was like the CSU extension.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. So
there were a bunch of guys from Boulder that came up. Gordon Knight was actually one of the ones. Yeah, the whole homebrewing world was like really, really interconnected with the original brewing world. And that's where I met Doug Odell.
Okay.
So Odell's didn't have their brewery up and running yet, and he was part of the homebrew club, the Mash Tongues, out of Fort Collins. Jeff Liebisch was in our homebrew club.
Okay.
Somewhere I've got a little sheet of paper where I won first place and Jeff Liebisch won second place in the homebrew competition, but I got to find out.
That's not hanging on the wall in the hall?
I don't know where it is.
That should be next to the medals.
It should be next to the medals right here in the hallway. But, I mean, that's – so just so everybody knows, I mean, that's how far back this all goes. I graduated in 1990 with a degree in microbiology and biology. And my senior kind of project that we did, I did fermentation. So I like brought beer to my class and said, hey, this is, and I realized right then, I was like, that's something people really can get behind. They're like, this guy makes beer. I mean, my roommates in college were like, oh, what's left? Oh, we can go in John's stash and we'll pull out some stuff. There were a couple that weren't so good, but I basically learned back then, you know, as long as you make good quality beer, people will drink it. So that was kind of how it got started. But that was 1990, and then Doug Odell didn't hire me.
Yeah,
we want to hear a little.
But before you explain that, I mean, this is a unique moment for us because we often get the second, third Colorado or national craft brewers. You are very much kind of first generation. Right, you're very much a part of the beginning.
First generation, but I was there when a lot of it started. I mean, I think when we opened, I didn't get the job at Odell's. We opened a brewery called HC Burger in Fort Collins, which then became Fort Collins Brewing Company later in life. That HC Burger was the 19th brewery in the whole state to open.
Wow.
And that included Coors at the time. What was crazy is my buddies and I from Fort Collins, every brewery opened up, we would go visit it. Well, I got to 100. And then I lost track. So, I mean, I stopped going to the first – I went to the first 100 after that. But, I mean, that took me – it was great. It took me down to Durango. Took me to, you know, places all over the state. And I learned a lot about brewing. I learned a lot about other brewers. And that was when, you know, the Colorado Brewers Festival was still a brewers-led festival. The Odell's and Kim Jordan and Jeff Liebisch from New Belgium and Brad Page from Coopersmiths. They started that. They said, hey, we want to have a cool beer festival. It was modeled after the Portland Brewers Festival where they actually paid the brewers for their beer, which was a novel.
I was going to say that's a novel concept.
I mean, how?
So, I mean, that's going back. So this is early 90s now. We're in 91, 92, 93.
I haven't heard the name Coopersmiths probably since I was in Fort Collins.
Is it? I mean, it has to be a tight-knit group at the time, right? Everybody knows each other.
Everybody knew everybody. I mean, I would come down from Fort Collins to go to WinCoop to drink beer. And then I remember when Rock Bottom opened up, the second one in Denver. I was like, oh, we got to go down for that. I remember going to all of those when they opened up. I mean, it's a long time coming. I mean, my first Great American Beer Festival was 1989.
Where was that at, by the way?
That one, I believe, was at the Merchandise Mart.
Oh, okay.
58.
Even better.
I
remember one at Arapahoe Community College. But
I remember that one. So at one point I had been to every GABF and every session of every GABF from 1992 to 2017. For 25 straight years I went to every single one. And then we kind of got booted by the BA. They're like, "Oh, they're not craft anymore." So we won't get into that.
We can. That could be a whole other episode.
Let's have a good episode, a positive episode.
So, yeah, tell us about how Doug Odell didn't hire you.
That's a better story.
So, I mean, it was crazy. I mean, like you said, it was a small, tight-knit community. You know, those breweries had three employees. It was Doug Odell, his sister Wynn, and Charlie, the guy that ran the filter and delivered beer in the truck on Tuesdays. Doug still has this mustard tan Toyota that he used to load the kegs up in and drive around town.
And he still has it?
I think he still does.
That's awesome.
He was talking about refurbishing it. The last time I was up there, I stopped in to see him. I said, would you ever think that you would be in a brewery that had your name emblazoned in concrete in the brew house with a giant logo? I was like, no. No, I helped them unload containers of malt. So we used to get 120-pound bags of malt, U-Baird, from England, and you would split a container with a brewery because there wasn't like a brewer supply group. And we would haul that malt in by hand up the stairs into his mill room, stack it up. I remember when he got 30-barrel fermenters. He had a 15-barrel brew house, and he got two 30-barrel fermenters. And we literally, six of us, manhandled them in with a forklift.
Holy shit.
Stood them up in this little silo room in his original brewery. So I applied for the job for brewer because he needed a brewer. And Phil Fraser is the guy that got it in front of me. And Phil was there for 20 years and then just retired. Probably did pretty good for himself. So
I would hope so.
So he didn't hire me, but he said, hey, this guy Sandy that I know is going to start a brewery. So Sandy Jones started HC Burger. So I was one of the original investors in 1991, 92 in HC Burger. Worked there, did the startup, did the construction, built the fermentation rooms, did all the work at the brewery, then started brewing the beer and then delivered the beer. And I would drive around town in an old Chevy Astro van, delivering kegs of beer, dropping them off, delivering them to the town pump, the old Chicago, down the basement of all the old town. So I learned all the business from the distributor, the sales part, and then, working at the tap room and stuff. So.
And not to jump too far ahead, but you designed and essentially built this brewery that we're in, but this wasn't the first time you'd done that project. Mm-mm. You've been building breweries since 91, 92.
I think I probably lost count, but I think there's probably around a dozen that I've helped somewhere along
the way. But have your thumbprint on, huh?
Yeah, design, build. Yeah, so while we were at HC Burger, there was a big push. There were these couple of guys that were going to open a brewery in Longmont called Left Hand.
I've heard of it.
Mm-hmm. So Dick and Eric came and spent 2 weeks with me in Fort Collins shadowing me at HC Burger. We helped them kind of lay out the equipment, go to their building, check it all out. And then I went down and did the first brews with them on their system because it was very similar to the one we had at HC Burger. I think that was 93. And then this other guy was going to start this brewery in Denver, right off of Arapahoe and 22nd. I think it's Great Divide. Probably heard of that guy, Brian Dunn.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So Brian did the same thing. So I brewed the first batches with Brian down at the Arapahoe location when they started in 1994. And then what's crazy is he ended up buying the used equipment from the HC Burger 50-barrel system. It's now their copper-clad brewery at their same location. And he said, hey, can you come help me get this thing restarted? So all those little connections, there's a lot of connections. I mean, I could probably go keep telling you more of those.
So, I mean, what we're looking at, I got to do the math on this, over 30 years of
28.
Colorado brewing history right here. Well, I mean.
Has your brain always worked this way? Where it's, you can look at a space and you can, I mean, why were people coming to you? Obviously, this is not something you just developed when you were 25. I was always
making, building, tinkering with stuff, when I was a kid, building tree forts, digging, the side of a hill out and then shoring up the walls to make a cave. I mean, you did the same thing, right? I don't know, I just turned it into something else, but I'm very practical when it comes to, it needs to be laid out in a neat, orderly fashion. Well, that doesn't always work, but how do you get around that? So MacGyvering stuff and coming up with new or better ways to do something, I tell people here, they call it brewmastering. Something breaks or there's like something that needs, like, can you come look at this? And I'm like, oh, we'll do this, this, and this. And they're like, how do you know how to do that? Figure it out.
Thinking outside of the box a little
Thinking
bit.
Outside the box,
I like that brewmastering. I'm going to start using that with everything else. Why don't you brewmaster this problem? Yeah. That's what I'm going
to
tell my kid.
They'll bring me a pile of parts and go, oh, you need to brewmaster this. And I'm like, yeah, you know what that is? That's me calling and getting a new one.
Yeah, no shit, right?
Sometimes, and that's what I tell people. I mean, very rarely anymore do I actually get in and get my hands dirty. I got a little dirty today making some malt bags happen. But my job is doing all the things that make brewing of the beer possible. So making sure the equipment works, making sure we have the ingredients, making sure the recipe's right, making sure that we've got the right schedule, making sure all of those different things. And now, I mean, for Blue Moon, my job is, it's turned into a lot of FaceTime. It's a lot of discussion. We used to do an awful lot of travel.
Okay.
I mean, I was on the road, before we built this place, I was on the road with Keith Villa, the founder, probably 30, 40 trips a year. And so we would split time up and, oh, a distributor wants to do a host a beer dinner and, we'd bring in specialty beers and I'd do a 5-course beer dinner. Well, we used to be able to do that in this place. And now those people get to come here. And so the reason we built Blue Moon Rhino was so that we had a place for people to come experience Blue Moon hands-on.
Did you ever think this was going to happen to you? I mean, we'll get back. I mean, we're just beginning the story, but this place is absolutely gorgeous. And you're a guy who learned how to brew at a CSU extension house in Fort Collins. I mean, this, not just your life, but I mean, are you just amazed by what craft beer has become in this country?
Oh, craft beer in this country, craft beer in the U.S., craft beer in Colorado. I'll never forget, I was at home, sitting at my parents' kitchen table. I was going to graduate, and I had to tell them I wasn't going to go to vet school. And I had given all my money to this guy, and we were going to start a brewery. And my mom literally said to me, is that even legal?
So the investment that you made, that was you were still in college when
that
you did?
That was grassroots, ground floor. I was going to buy an engagement ring.
Oh, my God.
I said, you know.
Are you
fucking? This sounds like a whole other story, but.
I thought you were, at that, I don't know, I was thinking.
No, I was only 23 years old.
John.
He said investment. I was going to poke a hole in that.
Holy cow.
I'm glad you brought it back to that, because he didn't just
talk invest. About playing the long game.
Yeah, no shit. So are you still part owner in HC Burger?
No, so I got a call. So 92 to 95, I was working at HC Burger. I saw an ad in the Denver Post, help wanted, brewmaster needed. Really weird, kind of send your resume to this P.O. box. It was very vague. And I'm like, oh, it's down in Denver. You know.
Yet again, is that even legal?
I don't know. So I sent
Does it matter?
My resume in to the post office box, typed it on a computer.
Wow.
And they called me. And they said, we're interested in meeting with you. Your resume is kind of interesting. And I'm like, can you tell me what this is for? Like, well, not yet. And I'm like, all right. So I got in my car, drove down I-25, and I met with these guys at the Broadway Brewing Company. So Broadway Brewing was the co-brewery of Wing Coop, Flying Dog, and the one in Aspen.
Oh.
And that was at the corner of Blake and Broadway, where the Silver States Laundry Building is now.
Yes.
This was across from where Mile High Brewing was, which is where... Do you have the beer book by Jonathan Sykes?
I mean, yeah, we do.
You might want to peruse.
Sam does. I don't have it. I didn't get my free copy. Yeah.
Friend of the show.
I paid for it. I had to pay for mine, and my freaking name's in it. And I'm like, Jesus.
Oh, well, all right. Well, then in that case,
anyway,
I'll pay for mine.
So I met with those guys there. We did a little interview. We talked about it, and they're like, here's the deal. We work for Coors, and we're going to start this brewery inside Coors Field, inside the right field corner. And I'm like, I don't know. I had actually worked for Coors for about 6 months as a quality control technician. Before I went to HC Burger, I kind of gained some experience. I'm like, definitely don't want to work in that line of work, so I'm going to actually brew the beer. So I was like, all right, let me think about this. And they're like, well, you know, it's going to be in right field. It's going to be inside Coors Field. Really cool operation. I had to go home, my roommate Rock, and I said, hey, where's right field? not a baseball fan.
Not a baseball guy. So
John Legnard is a soccer player.
Yes.
Let's just get that out in the open.
Fair enough.
And he and I have... Maybe not almost 30 years of history.
Heads together on the field more than once.
Yeah.
I respect that. No worries.
This is probably the most cordial encounter, or maybe the second most cordial encounter the two of us have ever had.
Yeah.
So,
well, most of the times when you're at Coors Field, you're better off not watching what's on the field anyway.
Sure.
So
sure.
You must be drinking the beer that John's making.
So what happened was I applied for that job. I was sitting in the brewery in Fort Collins at HC Burger, and Sandy Jones, now passed away, comes out and he goes, you're not going to believe this. Wayne Wannerden just got the job at the Coors Brewery they're building at Coors Field. And I went, guess I didn't get that job. Okay. So Wayne Wannerden, who was at Hubcap and
yes.
Bale,
yep.
was at the Sandlot in 1995 to open it up, was left after a year and a half, and went a bunch of other places, but then was at Station 26. He was handed a stack of like 400 resumes, and they said, well, you need to find an assistant. So he pages through it. I had known him because he came to our brewery in Fort Collins and run a 22-ounce Maheen bottler for us that we like shuttled between a couple different breweries. And so he called me up and he goes, I need somebody that can come brew some beer. And he goes, you know how to filter, because I'd run a filter before. He goes, would you like to come work here? And I'm like, I guess, what the hell? Well, I was there in 95 from the day it opened.
So what were you, like employee number three? Two?
For Sandlot?
Yeah. You were number two. What's up?
Bad. You said 400 resumes for that job, and I don't
doubt. You said it was a shit ton. Like
but where the fuck? I mean, In 95, is it all homebrewers at that point that are trying?
So the other guy that got the job with myself as an hourly employee, not on salary, a guy named Tom Hale, who's
okay.
still there.
Yes, yes, yes.
So Tom and I worked all through the summer of 95 up until I left in 2015.
Okay.
He was just here today. So those guys still actually report to me, technically.
And
but Tom was a homebrewer who was a finance guy who was managing like $500 million in 401ks at some big fancy office building downtown. And he's like...
And he wanted out of it.
Well, he said, this is going to be the end of the world. He goes, this banking industry does nothing, produces nothing. At the end of the world, there's going to be like walled little fiefdoms.
Yeah.
And people are going to come up and go, what did you do before the apocalypse? And he's going to go, I made beer. Oh, you can come in. Oh, I'm a banker.
Shit. I got to find a new job.
You might have to find
another
job.
Yeah, you
got to
do something
guys.
Else.
Yeah,
man.
You know what? Every once in a while, there's an apocalyptic realization yeah. here.
So what does that have to do with beer? I don't know. But that's part of the whole backstory.
No,
like,
trajectory.
You guys are just like, where is this going?
No. This is perfect
can
for us.
Can anybody follow this?
What year did Coors Field open in 95 too, right?
Yeah.
So like, so you're there.
Yeah.
Were you there before the first game was held?
Brand new stadium. Okay. It's a brand new building. Did you help design that brewery too?
I did not.
Okay.
Most of that stuff was done, but that's where it wasn't finished. Every brewery I've ever been a part of does not open on time.
Well, that's good to know.
That every brewery that in the history of man has never opened on time. Ask Bill and Ashley over at Bierstadt how much money I've won when they said, oh, we're going to be open by this date.
How much you've won?
Oh, yeah, because they're like, we're going to be open by October 1st. I'm like, bet you $5. I got a $5 bill on my wall that says Bill and John was right.
I love it. So. Shout out to our
your friends yes. over there.
Our friends at Bierstadt.
So, I mean, it was open, but it was – we had to have beer. Like, we were making beer the week before the stadium was even functional. I mean, we were there for the whole, you know – shit show that's anything like that major opening up and you're trying to make beer. Nearly the same thing here. We had to have beer on tap by July 16th when we opened, so we were brewing beer. They're like, oh, the fire department's coming. I'm like, shut it down.
Whoops.
Yeah.
So you've always been, or for quite a while too, interestingly enough, been in Rhino, right?
Yeah.
You've been in Ballpark, you've been in Lodo, you've been in Rhino for almost...
I love this area. I love Denver. I like this part of town. And that's what, when we started thinking about, you know, the Sandlot was making all these R&D beers for Blue Moon. Mm-hmm. We couldn't really sell them anywhere because half the season they're closed and they're only open 81 games a year.
Yeah.
So we were sending beer off to test markets and try to sell it, you know, to see what the reaction was. I'm like, we need something customer facing that we can get the general public in here and tasting our beer. So we have 24 different beers on tap. Those rotate. We do two a week. We did 120-something beers last year. New varieties out the door.
That's crazy.
Yeah. What happens is when you hit on one,
yeah.
Now you know we can do it on the 2-barrel system, scale it up on the 20-barrel system, and have 40 kegs of beer really quickly.
And then how many beers, what's your success rate? How often does stuff hit so big that it ends up in Golden?
We're trying to do like once a year. We're trying to get a new season.
You're trying to add a new one to Golden every year.
So we opened in 2016, and one of our biggest sellers that summer was Mango Wheat. So you know Blue Moon. It's fruited. It's wheaty. It's an entry-level beer for a lot of people.
Mango Wheat is one of Mrs. Schrader's favorites. And she only knows that because one of the kids that I coach in lacrosse, dad is a mechanic, a janitor, I don't know what. Carlos, I love you, man. I really don't know what you do over there.
He works there.
But when the six-pack falls off the truck, it somehow makes its way into my fridge, and Mrs. Schrader fell in love with Mango Wheat.
Yeah. I have friends like that in Chicago. Their dads, I know what they do, and a lot of things fall off the truck.
Right.
There,
no.
Yeah. In college, I got a lot of fun.
Carlos takes good care of us. Yeah. And truthfully, John will appreciate this as a soccer player. And I know nothing about lacrosse after 4 years of coaching it, but Carlos's kid the other day asked, why am I not playing? And I said, because I don't have any beer in the fridge. And I have now set the precedent that this kid's playing time is
strictly
dependent upon how much free beer shows up at my house. So,
okay, Carlos.
The way the world works.
Yes. Let's walk this back just a touch, because we jumped 20 years. Really,
that's
my fault.
Like
all over the place. Yeah.
No, but I want to know, okay, so you're brewing beer. This first off, we've never heard this term? Like, we don't hear about breweries sending off test batches and all of this. How does that even work?
Not
when
in
you
this
can't
space, no.
Yeah, like, who's getting them? Is it bars that are downtown?
Sometimes it's bars, sometimes it's a distributor, sometimes it's a specific location, sometimes it's an innocuous test where they basically bring in 100 people off the street and ask them, do you like this beer? Would you buy this beer? Depends on what it is. It's a different way to design beer, but what we have found, what we do here now,
is better.
100 times better.
Yeah.
People are voting with their wallet.
Yeah.
They're, one, paying us versus us paying someone to drink it and taste it and tell us what they think. And it's instant feedback. We know weekly, daily, hourly sometimes,
you can look at that data
we're selling of what beer. Yeah. And we see one hit. And honestly, we could even narrow it down even further. We'll release a new beer. We walk out. We talk to the wait staff, bartenders. We say, hey, this is our new beer. Here's what it is. There's enough of them that they're a pretty good barometer for, oh, this is going to sell or this is going to be delicious. And then they either talk it up, sell it, and they say, you know, same thing. People come in, they ask for what's on tap. We have 24 beers on tap. Mm-hmm. They're driving what they like. But we've got such a good bar staff now, we can ask them to, like, narrow it down, ask them what they like. Don't sell somebody that wants, you know, a light fruity wheat beer, a double IPA, just because it's your favorite beer. You have to tailor it to the consumer. And so that's what we do here. We tailor all of our beers to the consumer. We're looking for new trends. We're looking for new flavors. We're looking for something that's popular like mango wheat. And then that'll launch. So mango wheat launched, I want to say, about 16, 18 months after we brewed it here nationwide.
Trickle down.
It's nationwide. It's in all 50 states. It's in, you know, it's in all the retail accounts. It's also in a couple of foreign countries now. So Blue Moon's actually sold in 25 different countries. It's insane.
We got to get into the story. Like, well, I want to hear about the Belgian white, though. Belgian wheat, excuse me.
Yeah. Well, yeah, let's talk about the
my mom's favorite
the namesake.
Shout out.
Is that where you want to go?
Yeah,
want
to
the namesake?
I want to hear about
OG.
The OG, man.
So the OG, the idea for the original Blue Moon Belgian white came from Keith Villa, who now runs Syria Beverage. Mm-hmm. He left us in, I want to say, January 2017, so just about 2.5, 3 years ago now as of this time. And his idea was, he worked for Coors, and they said, we need somebody to learn about beer. They sent him to Belgium to get his PhD in fermentation science from the University of Brussels, where actually I've been and visited with him. And while he was there, he started, like, getting all this beer culture and understanding different things about beer and, you know, what makes it tick in Belgium. And when he came back, he said, hey, I've got this idea for a beer. I want to try this. It's not Hoegaarden, but it's more Americanized. So it's a sweeter, maltier, a little easier on the palate, a little fruitier beer at the Sandlot. So he brought us, you know, some ideas, some recipes.
What year was that?
1995.
Okay, so it's the same year. Okay.
This is a pivotal year, apparently.
This is a pivotal year.
Pivotal year. It's the same year I got my first ear piercing. So.
Wow.
Yeah, that's
so he brought this beer recipe and idea. So we made the original batches, but because we were inside a baseball stadium, everything had a catchy baseball name. So we had Squeeze Play Wheat, Power Alley ESB, Slugger Stout. So we named it Belly Slide Belgian White. We've got, you know, come to visit. You can see the poster I showed you. That's the original, like, pennant from the baseball stadium to say, hey, we got a new beer on tap, Belly Slide Belgian White. Okay. So July of 1995, so over 25 years ago now, we put that beer on tap. It went from an unknown beer to, like, our biggest seller that summer. It's smooth. It's easy drinking. There was no orange on the glass. People didn't know it's cloudy wheat beer. It's a little bit different time. You know, people are like, what is this? You know, but they're like, wow, this is really good. And so as Keith was trying to promote this beer, he took some samples up to the Golden Tasting Room, and one of the admins up there remarks, goes, oh, my God, this beer is so good. A beer like this only comes along once in a blue moon. You should sell this somewhere besides Coors Field.
What the okay, I got to write this down. Minute one.
Isn't that
minute
amazing?
29.
We just had a blue moon, by the way. Yeah.
And so that's kind of the genesis of the whole thing. I mean, the idea was there. They were trying to launch some craft beers. They were looking for new ideas. They had had a couple of craft lineups. They had tried, like, a German, a Weiss beer. And they tried, there's a Coors Bock out there. There's some other recipes. And, you know, the thing about Coors, and I tell people this all the time, they're a big, successful corporation for a reason. They take some chances, and they're willing to look at other things. I mean, during Prohibition, they did other things. They kept the business and the family employed. Mm-hmm. But it's like building a baseball stadium microbrewery they knew they didn't know how to do that, so that's why they hired people from outside. So, like, what do we need to do to make this successful? And, I mean, that was just the right time, right place. I tell people all the time, it's not necessarily the best beer. It's the right time for that beer. And what, now's, you know.
So, okay, so as you're brewing it, right, as you're kind of running the show, what are you thinking as this beer is, you're tasting it, it's selling a shitload, you know, people are drinking it. Is it, oh, my God, we're onto something, or...
I think it was just different enough that it stretched people's kind of comfort level, mm-hmm. and it made it okay to experiment. And so it was kind of that training wheels, like, ooh, I can try this. Ooh, what's that next one? Ooh, what's this? And so it leads a lot of people down that route of experimentation.
Okay. I mean, that's the only... Okay, at that time in 95, is Blue Moon on all of the taps in Coors Field, or is it just...
Just in the stadium.
Just in the restaurant.
Just in the restaurant.
So you're not walking into your seat and getting a vendor bringing a Blue Moon around you. You had to make your way to right field.
It was just in the corner of right field. It was just on like the three taps we had there. At that point, we had right field red, which is still made there, I think. I don't know. I haven't seen if they did it this year. That was a perennial bestseller. That was on tap from 95. And I think Squeeze Play Wheat was another light wheat beer that we had. It was a filtered or slightly cloudy, but it wasn't no fruit, no coriander, no orange peel.
What were you hearing from these people then as they were coming into the Sandlot?
It was tasty enough. It was hot.
I was going to say, 80,000 new testers.
And it's hot, right? That has to be so key. It's oh, Jesus, John. I'm so excited we did this.
Jonathan Shikes needs to come and write another book.
Oh, my God. Just about you,
yeah,
right?
I mean, I'm saying.
That's just crazy. Okay, all right. What do you want to say next?
I'm just happy I have a job someday. I like what I do. Yeah. So it's kind of fun for me. Like, you know, they say, you know, do something you love, you don't work a day. And you're like, I like coming to work. I mean, it's never the same thing twice. Sure, there's crappy days, but at the end, there's plenty of beer.
Yeah.
And you're making beer. Yeah. You make beer, and that makes people happy. Mm-hmm. That's a really great job.
Yeah, I don't want to continue to pound on this because I think this
you're
is
going
a,
to.
No. I just
kind of his MO.
No. Is there like when you can like think of what Blue Moon mean like that beer means to Blue Moon? Okay, what other breweries across the country have that one beer that not just defined them, but have allowed them to grow to the place where you are?
So.
I mean, there's some really good craft beers out there that started off as one beer wonders, I would say.
Yeah.
I mean, Sierra Nevada Pale Ale is an absolutely iconic beer.
Yeah.
I remember drinking that beer for the first time and going, oh, my God, this is so flavorful, so delicious. We made a batch of beer here that I drank it, and I went, oh, my God, we just made Sierra Nevada Pale Ale. We were experimenting with some hops. And I'm like,
can I have one of those?
It's like Crystal 60. It's a little bit darker. Like, they make fun of me. Like, oh, that's a 90s Pale Ale.
I was going to say, they didn't call it's and...
freaking good.
Yeah.
It drinks delicious. You know, Fat Tire, same thing. That's one beer that took off. And now they've got a lot more, you know, support under it. They've got other things going on.
But that is,
I mean, Blue Moon, it's iconic. Not only in the U.S. now, but actually internationally. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's crazy. It just resonates. Like, it hits all the, I don't know, the Venn diagram of everything that could be cool.
Yeah.
It fits that. It's delicious. It looks cool. It's sexy. It's got a ritual. It's got a glass. It's got a cool logo. I mean, it's, and the part that people don't understand is it's authentic. Like, we didn't create this to make Blue Moon successful.
Right.
This was here. Breweries were here. The beer kind of supported, to your point, the rest of the brewery.
And Blue Moon is still a craft beer. I mean, you look around this place.
Definition?
Well, mine.
Well, I mean, okay, let's be clear. I think
maybe not the BAs.
For people outside of here, being a kid from Iowa, my entry to craft beer was...
This had to be part of it.
A Blue Moon.
Yeah.
Or a Fat Tire.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that continues to this day. If you are in certain places around the country, around the globe... Your entry to craft beer is probably still a Blue Moon or a Fat Tire or a Sierra Nevada, which is a fantastic, like, that is what craft beer is. I mean, you brewed a beer that impacted this industry in ways that are kind of innumerable. What, like, how do you, I don't know.
I mean,
how do you not have a massive head?
It's just beer, though. I mean, that's,
he saves his ego for the soccer field.
Yeah. No, it's just beer. And that's what I tell people. At lowest common denominator, anybody that drinks a beer, you can be friends with all Doesn't matter if they're rich, doesn't matter if they're poor, doesn't matter if they're conservative, doesn't matter if they're liberal. You can be friends with people over a beer. So beer is like the one thing that brings people together, no matter what your socioeconomic, religious, whatever. People like beer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's been doing it for a long time, so maybe it's the thing that saves the world. Who knows?
Let's hope it is. Let's talk about the global reach for a second,
yeah.
Because I would still challenge, maybe not the BA, but I would still challenge a lot of people to say that the Blue Moon is still a craft beer, based on a couple of things. You guys have, what is it, a two-barrel test pilot system right here?
That's okay.
Like I said to Sam earlier, it could go in your garage,
mm-hmm.
Which is amazing, and that's where some of the beers are
a
probably
higher cost than most people's garage.
Yeah, that makes me feel Ferrari makes me feel better about my car, but you're creating. What did you say, 120 new beers a year in a good year?
Yeah, 100 to
120. That's craft beer right there.
Yeah.
But you're then now pushing this beer to 25 countries. You've got, I guess we didn't address the fact that we're not only in a brewery, but we're in a restaurant, right? Mm-hmm. So you have two more of these facilities,
yep,
overseas.
Well, we have five in the U.S. too.
Oh, fuck, I didn't realize that.
I mean,
That's
why he's traveling so much.
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't just to Spain, right?
Spain was a great trip. I wish I could have spent more time there. I was literally on the ground for 60 hours.
Oh, wow.
It was worst overseas trip I've ever had because it was like timing wasn't great. I was like, I got to run in there. I got to do this. I'll give you the whole – maybe we can start with that. So before we were, you know, international, we were barely – making it in the U.S. in the late 90s, mid-90s, Coors wouldn't let Blue Moon be brewed inside any of its own facilities. We only had one in Golden. They didn't want orange peel contaminating Banquet or Coors Light.
Interesting.
So we contracted out. So it was made at FX Matt in upstate New York. It was made at Utipol in Ohio, which is now Sam Adams.
Okay.
And then they finally said, all right, this is big enough. We can bring it up and, you know, I don't know what the barrelage was, but it's, you know, it takes a while to get to where you're at the level that a Coors Brewery brand makes sense. So we brewed it at contract.
So you weren't still a part of the stable yet?
Yeah, we weren't. We were the redheaded stepchild.
Okay.
Keith will tell you the story, and Pete Coors will admit it. He brought that beer to the board of directors, and they tried it, and they thought it was terrible. They tried to kill it. Pete says he tried to kill it three or four times. He's like, this is never going to do that to anything. It's a little bit more than nothing right now. So then we started doing a lot more R&D work, a lot more seasonals. We do all the experimental stuff. I mean, we did beer wine hybrids in 1996 where we did white wine grapes, wheat malt, and we made a beer wine hybrid. It tastes like a white wine spritzer. We still do that in the summer here. So that's like that crossover that people are like, what? You do what?
So when are they going to tell you to start canning that? Or putting that in bottles.
We're going to work on that.
We're going back.
So
we did,
I don't know. Chardonnay all day was one. We
okay.
did one with Riesling white wine grapes, which was just knockout delicious.
Okay.
But it has to be mostly malt, otherwise mm-hmm. you get taxed at the wine level. So we
kind
of
flirt with
where's the line.
Yeah.
But so we wanted more experiential. We wanted more things. So we've got we opened one in Norfolk, Virginia, right on the waterfront. Which is a Blue Moon.
One of these.
Branded tap house. No brewery.
No brewery.
It's actually a licensed facility that someone else licenses the name from us.
They
run the food side, but all the beer comes from here.
Gotcha.
So we do that in Norfolk, Virginia. We've got another one in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, which unfortunately is a great location if we had professional sports, because it's kind of it's of the Bermuda Triangle of the hockey, basketball arena, the baseball arena, and the football arena. Imagine if it was like kind of where, you know, Tivoli is.
Yeah, yeah.
If it was right between all
those. Right in the epicenter.
Except there's no college there and there's no professional sports right now. So that one's not doing.
Sounds like a great location for a press conference, though. I mean, they mm-hmm. probably screwed the pooch on that one.
Exactly.
We've got one in Las Vegas
okay.
inside Planet Hollywood.
Oh, okay.
We've got
Good
one
Lord.
In Kentucky Derby. Churchill Downs.
At the facility, that's right.
At the actual racetrack, which, as of course you know, there was no race with fans this year.
Yeah.
So that's why we made a mint julep beer that I'm going to give you guys some of for that specific one. And then we expanded outside, and we were like, okay, this is a big beer. Where do we see this going in 5 years? And I was like, if we could export this idea of a cool location, good food and beer pairings in a tap room, that would give people, you know, a place to experience it. But it's also like a living, breathing billboard. So instead of putting up a billboard and flooding the market with cans or bottles of beer, we had a partner build a tap room where we send all the beer to Panama City. So it's in a really cool location.
Panama
it's,
City.
Yeah, Panama City. It's right on this old town square. It's across from the U.S., the American Hotel in Panama. I mean, it's just a neat, I mean, I think the building's 400 years old.
Wow.
So we ship one-way PET recyclable kegs out of here directly to Panama.
Okay.
And then we did the same thing in Madrid. Really cool location in Madrid. I got to go to a couple soccer stadiums there, so see?
No, I'm excited. Like, yeah. Brian, your brother and I have been trying to plan a guy's trip.
To Madrid?
No. Six dudes, go to England, no sleep, 3 to 4 EPL matches.
Yeah.
I think we found our...
Brian, Brian played on the team
And Ken said he's in, so...
Oh, yeah. Well, you're running out of seats. running out of seats.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Blue Moon has big reach.
Now, I'm gonna draw back, and I've indicated a couple of times off the air, and probably more than my fair share on the. I don't remember a lot over the last 7 or 8 months. When you and I sat down in February, there is a defining. I feel like there's a defining characteristic in all of the Blue Moon tap rooms. Am I missing something? Am I misremembering?
Well, that we took a lot of the elements of here. So each one is slightly different than the other. They're not carbon copies.
Right.
So the elements would be like the big giant light fixture.
That's what I'm getting at. The giant light fixture.
It all feels like if you go on right now and look at Blue Moon Panama, Blue Moon Spain, and the other one that just opened is South Korea.
Oh.
What the? Did you go there?
I haven't been there yet. It's literally like we're going to open this, but I don't know if anyone can come. So
okay.
We're working on that.
We're going to let the Koreans in, and then we'll see how it goes.
See how it goes. But yeah, no, there's design elements and certain touches, you know, the wood finishes, the look and feel. It wouldn't be exactly the same, but you'd be like, oh, this is Blue Moon.
But isn't the big blue light fixture moon a staple in every...
It's in every one.
Okay. Yeah. And that thing is...
And that was built right here in Denver.
Fucking cool, if I just say so myself. The aesthetic quality of what we're seeing in this space
is unbelievable. I think, you know, I don't know how many people are local or how many people aren't, but I mean, come visit us, and I would tell them... You'll probably be pleasantly surprised. I think you guys are suitably surprised and somewhat impressed. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a cool place. The food's good. The beer's great. It's a neat place to come, and it's true and authentic to the history of Blue Moon.
All right. Well, I'm not going to close up shop yet. I'm not trying to do that. But knowing that this conversation is going long already, I want to ask you, can we pick your brain a little bit about the future of craft beer?
Yeah.
Sure.
In 2020.
Let's talk about right now.
Let's talk about right now.
This week, how bullshit was Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday for craft brewers outside of the Blue Moon space? Did you even have your finger on the pulse?
Say that again?
Did you have your finger on the pulse of what the city of Denver and the mayor's orders were doing to brewers for the last couple of days?
Absolutely. So we follow that.
I'm sure.
We have people. And the good thing is... We actually have legislative liaisons at Coors
who
call us and say, hey, these are the rules that are coming down. Would you like us to give any input? And so we're able to, at least because we're a big company, give input. And anything we're going to say about, hey, we have 27,000 square feet of space here, half of it's brewery. You have 13,000 square feet of restaurant. Our max capacity shouldn't be 50. Give us a number.
25% or whatever.
Give us a number of, you know, square footage per person, whatever. And the same thing, we're like, we would love to have, you know, closed off road, closed off patio. It's not conducive to us here, but absolutely everybody should be taking advantage, talking to whoever your officials are. And that's the thing, I mean, these neighborhoods, it doesn't matter if it's Blue Moon, doesn't matter if it's Mockery, doesn't matter if it's Great Divide. These are places that are suffering because they just said, we're not having any of it.
Yeah.
Close it down. I'm like, how do you expect them to survive?
And it's so up and down too, right? I mean, breweries were operating under fairly normal circumstances. And then Friday they got told that unless they had their own food,
they couldn't do it.
Yeah, which is insane.
I did hear that. Or if they had food close by was the new.
Well, it had to be on the adjacent property line, which is insane, which I think is kind of what I was getting at. You guys may have been above that as a facility.
We were technically deemed essential personnel when the actual lockdown came because we were making beer. And so I made sure that our job was do everything we could to keep beer flowing
to
either the other tap rooms, to this one. You know, we made hand sanitizer at the Ironton Distillery down the street. So Coors has a pretty big purchasing organization. Mm-hmm. And I found straight ethanol Okay. 90 proof. And I said, hey, can we mix this? They said, you can't mix it at your facility. It's not, you know, that's not cool. I said, how about Ironton? So we mixed, I don't know, 350 gallons of hand sanitizer, handed it out to police, firefighters, first responders, healthcare workers. Some lady saw it on our Instagram. She's like, I'm running this little, you know, this home, elderly home, and we don't have any. I'm like,
done. Yeah, here done.
Here's 10 gallons out the back door.
Wow.
So, I mean, little stuff like that, just do what you can. And that's what's, these breweries are going to survive because people that build breweries aren't quitters, and they're certainly, they're able to, like, adjust with the times. It's when you say, I can't do this because this is the rules, figure out a way around it. I mean,
yeah.
I've been figuring
out. Brewmaster it.
Brewmaster it. Figure it out. I figure out ways around, you know, if they make a rule, I'm like, okay, what does that mean I can do? Well, you can't do this. I said, that's not what I asked. Tell me what I can do.
What's this do to the business of craft beer? Not just, you know, the functionality of it, but being you are Blue Moon, being you have a relationship that is obviously at its core related to Coors, what happens to a microbrewery or to a brew house or to a nano brewery or even a place like Denver Beer Co. I mean, you can probably read the tea leaves a little bit.
I think most of the good ones will survive. I think There's probably going to be some people that either didn't plan ahead, don't have a huge cushion, were on the edge anyway.
Okay.
They're going to get weeded out. And I mean, I feel bad for a lot of them because maybe it would have taken them 6 more months to really make it. But, you know, if they can resurface I don't know that they're going to all completely die off. I think there's going to be a couple that hang on and do good things. I have one friend that's actually opening a new brewery. Yeah. I'm like, so if you're opening a brewery, the ones that are closing probably were going to close anyway at some point. I mean, they were probably in trouble, I would guess. This didn't help. This probably accelerated that bad.
What makes for success? Is it a good restaurant inside of it, or is it a good, you know, food truck partner? Like, what?
I mean,
what's going to make it work?
I think, you know, for us, we're a destination. We've got nationwide and international pull.
Okay.
We've been open as much as we can to the maximum capacity that's legal. When we furloughed wait staff, kitchen staff, bar managers, and things like that, we kept our social media person online.
Okay.
Because we're like, if we're going to have messages out, if we're going to do stuff, you know, and she was the one that said, hey, you know what, there's some first responders and hospitals that are looking for meals. All right, you know what? That makes sense. Let's call in our kitchen staff for a week and we'll make 5 different meals Monday through Friday and we'll send them off to these. And so, you know, throw them in the back of my truck, go deliver them to Swedish Hospital. I mean, that's what we did.
Jeez.
You know, but, you know, those were like, people were donating money and, you know, they wanted to help, but they didn't know how to help. So we were taking whatever we could and turning that into actual, you know, box lunches.
Yeah.
Benefit.
Makes total sense.
That's
but
awesome.
I mean, you know, probably weren't making any money, but it got our kitchen staff in. It got those people, you know, working and doing something. So, and that, you know, same token, it kept the food suppliers. I mean, they stopped dead. What do you, how much food do you sit on?
I want a hoppy beer. What would you say, Brewmaster? Okay. Is the West Coast IPA pretty good?
Yeah, West Coast IPA is really good.
West Coast, please, for me.
Tangerillo is pretty delicious. The gold medal winning Moon Haze will not be ready until next week.
Okay.
I just thought I'd throw it in there.
Thank you, sir.
Because we didn't actually talk about it.
I would like to try the Irish Nitro Stout, to be totally honest.
We want to give you the floor.
I didn't know you guys had one of those.
Yeah. I want to give you the floor for a second. I mean, what do you want to cover that we haven't covered yet? Because obviously, what you're doing here is pretty impressive. What you're going to do in the next 10 to 15 years of your career, pretty impressive. But what's the future for John look like?
What is next?
I mean, this is a great place to be, and I think it's going to be a great place to be. I mean, I've got 5 really good brewers that work for me right now, and they're all, you know, happy to be here. They get to make new beers every day. They're experimenting. You know, some days are better than others. Some days are tough. But I'm like, you know, we haven't even – I wouldn't even say we've scratched the surface. We've started to hit our stride here because we have so many different irons in the fire, so many different things going on. We do Blue Moon R&D. We do some, you know, draft beer for 7 different pubs throughout the country and the world. So we're moving beer on a fairly regular basis.
Okay.
But I think, you know, we talked about, you know, we've got room. Do we put in a canning line and do we start, you know, start small and do some local beer out of here that you can't get anywhere else? I mean, is that, we do growlers, you know, we do glass. We've got a growler filler.
Yeah.
But that's kind of not the way things are going. So do we flex and go to cans? Do we do something different? I mean, the sky's the limit. And as long as you're, you know, you're making progress, I say, you know, keep going in that direction.
How does the future plans for Golden. What are they calling it? The Golden.
Oh, G150.
Thank you. I was trying to remember what it was.
Yeah, so I mean, that's a major expansion, major modernization. I mean, have you ever been out there?
Hell yeah.
That place is absolutely
short tour once a week.
Freaking incredible. So yeah. If you ever get a chance to go on the long tour, I mean,
we know a guy.
The stuff that they have made out there to just, you know, they've brewmastered that place for 100 and
yeah, what did it start? Smaller than this, probably, right? And they've just
actually,
been.
Actually, if you look back, I think they were like 9,000 barrels.
Oh, wow.
Back when Coors took over. It was a sizable. I mean, even today, it's a. But miners drink a lot of beer. I mean, that's all you had was cowboys and miners. And
right.
Most of them drink a fair amount of beer. But yeah, it was different times. You know, they didn't distribute. They just, you know, had draft beer and maybe some bottles. I mean, wasn't. But, you know, I think what's going on there is it's good for Golden. It's good for brewing. It'll increase, you know, it'll increase the quality and the output and get everything kind of modernized. I mean, they have old stuff out there. But you know what? There's nothing wrong with old breweries. I mean, you go to Belgium, they're making beer in the same way they were 300 years ago.
Yeah, that's so amazing.
Don't change it if it's working.
When you opened this place then, I guess, to kind of, what were you most excited like to brew in terms of styles?
You know, I like traditional styles. Okay. I like the traditional German. So when we were at the Sandlot, I mean, we've won 40-something medals at the JBF. Most of them are traditional German. I've been making Pilsners since my homebrew days in 1989.
Okay.
I like a good, crisp, clean Pilsner, a Helles. That, if you go to another brewery and they've got a light beer on, that's the beer that tells you, do they know how to make beer?
Yeah.
Anybody can throw a ton of hops in a beer. Anybody can make a dark stout. Anybody can, you know, overdo anything. It's when they're good and when they're balanced and when they're delicious that you know they're right on. The best part about this is we can make anything. So we do everything from, you know, an Imperial Cherry Stout in a freaking Woodford Reserve barrel to the lawnmower beer that I'm about to sip on. I mean, literally any style goes. You know, things I'm most excited about is just being able to do any of those things. And I think one of the best examples is Brian, who's one of our brewers now, started off here as a barback, as a busboy.
Wow.
And he was like, I just want to get in the beer industry. He was working at, what's the tap, the U-Tap it place? I can't think of the name of it.
First Draft. Okay.
And he's like, oh, this is a new brewery. I'm going to go. And so then he's like, hey, can I help you guys fill some kegs? Hey, well, to watch him go from barback, barkeep to keg guy to, hey, I'm going to let you design a beer. And he made a beer, helped him. And then he's like, he goes, it tasted exactly like I thought it would. I'm like, that's the moment when you're like, I get requests from marketing people, sales people. I need a beer to taste like X, Y, and Z. Can you brew this particular flavor? Mm-hmm. So we reverse engineer beers all the time. Mm-hmm. I won't say it's taking the fun out of it, but like I'll drink a beer and go, oh, I wonder how they did that. Or what did they do to get to that point? Mm-hmm. And that's how we've been doing it since we started the Sandlot, 25 years. Make me something that's X. And I mean, that's what's great about this is we can experiment and have fun. But, you know, there were days where we made the two craziest beers we probably ever made. We made a peanut butter ale in 1996 that literally, that's like a rage now.
Yeah,
we made a peanut butter ale. And the reason we made a peanut butter ale is we wanted to do, the marketing people wanted a peanut butter and jelly six pack. They wanted a raspberry cream with a layer of peanut butter. Don't ask me why, but so we literally did the search. We were looking for, you know, do you go get the dry roasted vendor nuts? We went and got grind your own at Whole Foods down in Cherry Creek when it was the only natural grocery. That stuff tastes like crap.
Yeah.
So we went Skippy, Jif, and Peter Pan, and we did a blind taste test.
On all three of those?
On all three of them. Choosy brewers, choose Jif.
There you go. I had no idea.
Now
that's what we still choose at home, too.
It's good. The chunky doesn't work. It makes a mess.
We use the all-natural.
But then when you go to the store and you buy 50 pounds of peanut butter, they sit there and look at you.
Yeah. What's this weird guy doing at home?
Dog involved. I'm like, making
dog people. Involved. So didn't leave the house for months.
Did the peanut butter and jelly six-pack make it to market?
No, the raspberry cream did. Raspberry cream was one of the early ones. But the peanut butter beer, we put it on tap, and they're like, we got to test it, but we got to put a sign up, may contain nuts, and everybody's all paranoid about it.
Oh, jeez.
Everybody ruins a good time, right?
Yeah, they really do.
Always.
We put it on, and I'll never forget, we were giving away samples at the bar, Coors Field, and one lady goes, that's not nearly as disgusting as I thought it would be. And I'm like,
thanks.
Probably not going to be successful. Fast forward to, like, I don't know, 2007 GABF, we put it on tap, and people were, like, chanting for it, peanut butter.
Oh, my God.
It's delicious. It tastes like you have a handful of peanuts, and you drink a beer.
I was going to say, it sounds like a perfect beer at Coors Field.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So how often does it come back around here?
Well, here's the deal. We don't do it anymore because of food allergies.
Fuck.
We couldn't guarantee...
Oh, yeah, this is too much going on.
We had a University of Nebraska food scientist come in, and they tested our pre-kettle, our post-kettle, our cleaning water, all that stuff, and they gave us the non-detectable. Well, non-detectable is not zero. So there's a threshold. So imagine, worst-case scenario, you're at a beer festival, and you have peanut butter ale on, and the next beer festival is, you know, at a, you know, sporting event, and it's Coors Light, and somebody drinks the first one, and mm-hmm. there's just a... So we... Can that?
I that's think. Just yeah. Shit. That's impossible.
That's horrible. What about canning and bottling something like that? I mean,
well,
is that
it would have to have on the label
may contain traces of peanuts
produced at a facility that may contain nuts. So we kind of yanked that one off the.
All right. Well, you let us know if somebody lets you do it again because I want to try that one.
I don't have any more questions. I mean, I do have a ton. Yeah. But
Sam, I know you.
Yeah.
I just know in looking at our listener data. No, I want to sit here and drink beer with you, but I got 15 minutes.
We're going to have to put it on the calendar at this point.
No, I think we have to.
Sam's about to get a promotion, so he's going to have less...
less free time?
Less... No. Less teaching time.
I don't have to teach.
And more...
I'm going
outreach,
to the administration. I'm a college professor.
More administration.
Ah,
yeah. Yeah. I'm going to the dark side, as we say, in faculty.
You know, I used to teach the class at Metro State.
Which one? The beer.
And spirits.
He taught
when?
Romantic
like when
poetry.
Was...
And...
Before, yeah, poetry, yeah. I've got a few other tricks up my sleeve. Well, before they had a brewing lab and all that stuff. So Michael Ray, we started the class with Johnson & Wales.
Yeah.
And they said no. So we then ended up in the hospitality restaurant management with Metro State, and they would come to the Sandlot Brewery. The students would come one day a week during the semester, spring, summer, fall, and learn how to brew beer at the Sandlot.
I didn't know any of this shit was available when I was in college, by the way.
Well,
and so that was part of it. And then they built the brewery. They built the new teaching lab there with the hotel and all that stuff. And we did one or two classes, and then like, we're gonna have our own brewery on campus. I'm like, well, I guess we're out.
That's so cool. I had no idea. Damn, John, I should.
That was like 10 years of my life.
I don't even know who teaches. Scott's the guy that heads it up now. Scott. Yeah, because Ethan's gone.
What else? I mean, I got all kinds of stories. We could go on and on.
Well, let's do some off the. Ken is a good guy. Okay, Jay's gonna go. I'm gonna pick your brain for a while. John Legnard, thank you so much, sir. We're gonna have to do this again because you told us more shit in that walk around than you did on this podcast for 55 minutes. So thank you.
Thank you guys, appreciate it.
I would say, what do you want us to plug normally? But I mean, Blue Moon.
Swing by and drink some beer with us, and go visit the GoFundMe for Denver Beer.
Are you doing to-go orders and delivery? Do you know?
To-go orders, yes. If you want to buy it to go out the door, yeah.
But no delivery.
I think we can do Grubhub or one of those, yeah.
You do, but okay, so that does happen. Okay, because the food here was amazing. So awesome, thanks, buddy. Take care, thanks, John. When they come to